Dennis, it's good to see everybody. All right. Welcome to all of Kaylee, how are you? Welcome to all our visitors. We really appreciate you. And to everybody that comes every week, we are so glad that you could join us. Is this, I'm good here? Okay, everybody can see me? No? Very funny. Okay, you've joined us at a time when we're going through a new series on relationship with myself, relationship with others, and relationship with God. And what you find is that if I'm going to be able to relate well with other people and to relate well with God, I also need to be able to relate well with myself. Because it is how you view yourself that's going to determine how those other relationships are going to go. So if you've got some issues, it's going to impact the way that you relate to other people. And ultimately, the way that you relate or you see God. On Friday, we were at the Men's Connect in Kwinana at Robert Cleaver's house, and a discussion was held in regards to God the Father. You know what, you know, Mr. Andrew spoke about. He's talking about sonship and being adopted into God's family. And he spoke about, you know, whether you see God as God the Father or as Dad. Do you see him as Father or Dad? You know, and we sort of like began to speak and how we sort of like relate to God. And I then said, look, I call God Father. Now, maybe that's not, and I don't, if I call him Dad, I cringe, you know, to call God Dad. But each to, you know, I think that it all depends sometimes on how you've related with your earthly father. I never called my earthly father Dad. I always called him Father. Now, maybe there was not a huge emotional connection there. So just, I remember the one time that I called him Dad, it was when one of my brothers was in hospital, and I said it, and I just cringed on the inside when I said it, because I was like, oh, that's just an awful word. I'm not going to use that word anymore. So I related to him as Father. And it's such a, I remember at 2 o'clock on Saturday morning, I sent Andrew a message to say, you know what, I've been thinking about just that conversation about God the Father and Dad. Now, whether you call him Father or Dad, let's not make a big deal out of that. But it's about closeness of relationship. Father is, you know, very, I'm the Father. Dad is more, seems to be, perhaps can be conceived as more inviting. Now, from an African background, it's just Father, you know, because you don't know, our dads were, these are old school dads. The dad is just, the father is just the father. And sometimes closeness is not something that some of these, you know, the old African guys did. We're the new school, and we have to sort of like, you know, be all close and with that, with our children. But as I thought about just how I relate to God, and I said to him, you know, it's real food for thought for me. For me, like, I can say that I don't call him Dad, not because I don't like him, but because maybe the relationship isn't there yet. So it's a work in progress. Wherever you are, it could be you're cool with calling God Dad, but the key thing that we all need to know is that we've been adopted into his family. Therefore, we've got the full rights like a son has, where we can go into his throne with boldness. And the reason I mentioned that is about how you relate with yourself will determine how you relate with other people. And so we've started this new series, and the whole premise of the series is that we know that relationships are important to success in our lives. You know, whether we like it or not, we need to have successful relationships. So if you want to do well in life, have good relationships with people. Because you're not an island. You cannot do things by yourself. You need other people to bring you along. We know that God is sovereign, and if God wants to give you stuff, he'll give it to you. But the unfortunate thing is that God works through people. So he's going to send somebody along the way to help you. Now, if you're terrible with people, what normally happens if you don't endear yourself with people? They never think about you. Like, oh, that's a terrible person to be around. So endearing yourself and just being a good person is actually integral to the success that you'll achieve in your life. When I was at university, I never used to... Who used to watch the old WWF? Yes, WWF before it became WWE. And they used, and before we knew it was fake. Before we knew it was fake. Did anybody remember one of the characters in there was Doink? Anybody remember Doink? The clown? And one of the things, the clown would come up and the clown is happy and then all of a sudden he gets sad. I thought, you know what? That character represents me very well. And I started walking around, you know, just with that stern look always on my face, which is not good if you're trying to make friends with people. And a friend at university said to me, I think you need to smile a bit more. Now, if you're going to make friends with people, it's really good if you have a nice, bright smile. It doesn't have to be over the top, but it's just a nice, gentle, because I'm always stern and always serious. And I wondered, how come people never just used to be drawn towards me? Because maybe I took myself too seriously. And I recall a time when I would have this dream, a recurring dream. It was a, you know, when you have something that recurs or happens all the time, you know there's something there. I'm having this dream, and in this dream I see a lady. And this lady in the dream, I really do not like this lady. For some reason, you know when you feel, who's ever felt hate? Let's be real here, you know? Like, I'm sleeping, but I feel tremendous hate for this lady. Tremendous. I can feel it in my body and I'm asleep. Oh, I hate this person. And I would utter those words in the dream. Oh, I hate this person. And it went on for years. I'd probably have the dream twice a year. Period of 10 years. Just this hate that I had towards this person. And I never figured out why. Why? Because I knew the lady in the dream. And I thought, in real life, I don't hate this lady. But in my dream, all my anger was directed towards that individual. Sometimes in our lives, now if you've been old enough to have lived long, you will know that injury comes to all of us. People get hurt in life. That's unfortunately, that's just the way it is. But at times, the injury, we then end up carrying the injury and the wounds with us. But we know that if I've got a wound, and if I leave it untreated, after a while, it's not going to be good for me because it's going to get infected. And then after getting infected, then possibly they might say, oh, look, we need to, you know, maybe cut it out. Just cut out whatever, a piece of your flesh so that, you know, it preserves your whole body. That's what happens when we allow the injuries that we accumulate along the path of life and we don't deal with them. What it does, you see, is that it immobilizes us, and we cannot live that full life where we just want to experience the fullness of joy. You'll come to church every Sunday, and you know you always talk about the fullness of joy, the joy of the Lord is my strength, and you can quote all those scriptures, but there's just something that you're carrying that's impacting your ability to live a free life. And it's like I heard this story of a monkey. Researchers were doing, they were doing some research, and they put some sugar cubes in a gourd or everybody knows what a gourd is. So it's just a big thing with a very small neck. And so they put the sugar in there. And so the monkeys came and put his hand into the gourd and grabbed the sugar. Obviously, because it was going to enjoy itself, grab the sugar. Then people came to want to capture the monkey. Now, you would assume that the monkey is going to let go of what's in its hand, but it wouldn't. It wouldn't let go. And then, of course, to its own detriment, it ended up being caught. Sometimes that happens when we carry wounds in our lives, when we don't let go, when we don't deal with stuff. What it does is that it just puts us in a position where things just don't seem to work well for us. When we find ourselves going through recurring things where you're struggling with the same thing over and over again, and you keep asking yourself, why is it that I'm always being tripped up with this particular issue? That sometimes is an indication that there is a deeper thing going on. We know that we've heard of learning models. So if I go, let me just see, my ears, I used to, you know, when I was at school, well, not when I was at school, even now, people used to make fun of my legs. They used to make fun of my legs, and so what happens is that as a learning model, so they keep making fun of my legs, it could be my ears. You say, oh, you got big ears. Oh, hello, Dumbo. You know, they start calling me that at school. So after a while, you know what you start doing? You start putting on a woolen hat. Because what you do when you put the woolen hat on, you cover the ears. Because now if people can't see my ears, then they can't make fun of me. Now, for a small child, that's okay. Because what they're doing, even though they don't realize it, is that they're creating a way of thinking. So the one thing I can do is I'll cover my ears so that nobody can make fun of. The problem is that if it's 32 degrees outside, you've still got your woolen hat on. Now, this becomes a way of thinking. Now, it's okay for a child when they're dealing with something to try and avoid or being made fun of. They do that. But imagine if you then start growing into adulthood. You start moving into your teen years. You start moving into your 20s, your 30s. That learning model, that way of coping, of trying to avoid people or trying to avoid dealing with stuff is not going to be good for you. So learning models that are caused at times by being teased or people making fun of us or somebody saying something nasty or you're ugly or you're this or something doing just not doing bad things to us. In this scripture, I'll just turn to Matthew chapter 22, verse 36 to 40. And what we're talking here is that if I'm going to be good with people, in fact, my wife is not responsible for my happiness, and neither am I responsible for hers. Because if I put all, if I vest all, and I say my wife is responsible for my happiness, it is going to be a very miserable marriage. Because that is unfair on her to put all that expectation on her to be responsible for my personal happiness. So my personal happiness is my responsibility, not anybody else's. And just like I might think that, oh, you know, when I get married, I am going to, all my problems are going to go away, and so is responsible for it. And I'll be shocked when I do get married, and all of a sudden I find that those issues possibly start getting worse because I've vested them in somebody else. And so it's quite important that you deal with yourself, you are happy within yourself. So my happiness is my personal responsibility. And when I say to kids, you know, I sort of like say, I might use a word like self-care. And I ask them, what is the operative word there? Or the best one that I use is personal hygiene. And I say to them, what is the operative word there? And the operative word in personal hygiene is personal. It's your hygiene, so you gotta. It's your responsibility for your own happiness. You are responsible for that, and nobody else. And so, I am not going to expect that. Oh, now when I get married, my wife is going to make me happy. Because if I'm not happy within myself, I then cannot be happy with another person. So Matthew 26, verse 36 to 40 says, and this is when the Pharisees came to trip the Lord up, and they tried to, you know, ask him a trick question. They said, "Teacher, which is the most important commandment in the law of Moses?" Jesus replied, "You must love the Lord your God with all your heart, all your soul, and all your mind. This is the first and greatest commandment. A second is equally important. Love your neighbor as yourself. The entire law and all the demands of the prophets are based on these two commandments." Then the next one is in Exodus chapter 8, verses 8 to 11. This is at a time when God had sent Moses to free the children of Israel and say, "Go to Pharaoh and say this, let my people go." The first thing, he turned his staff into a snake, and Pharaoh's guys did the exact same thing. No big deal. This is the second plague, the frogs. He says that if you don't let my people go, I'm going to bring out frogs that are going to go into all areas of your household. You guys are just going to be infected with frogs. Who would love to have just frogs all over the house? Not good, eh? Mice. Imagine if it was mice. If I was Pharaoh, I'd be like, no, get rid of these mice. But frogs, even worse. I recall a time when I went into the bathroom, and somehow I was standing in the mirror, and I said, something is not right in here. I just knew, and I could see, and then I looked clearly on the basin. There was a small, and when I say small, it was probably that big, very small green frog. Oh, and I thought, and I was so scared of the green frog, very small thing. And so I went and I woke my son up. He was probably 5 years old at the time. And I said, "I will pay you $5 to remove that frog." And so that was a quick $5 that he made, because he wasn't afraid of the frogs. So imagine now a whole household full of frogs. You open the cupboard, the frogs are there. You go in the bathroom, there's lots of frogs. You go into your wardrobe, it's just teeming with frogs. Everywhere that you're stepping, there's frogs. And so we find then that Pharaoh is now, he recognizes that, look, I need to get rid of these frogs. So we pick it up in verse 8 where it says, "Then Pharaoh summoned Moses and Aaron and begged, 'Plead with the Lord to take the frogs away from me and my people. I will let your people go so they can offer sacrifices to the Lord.' 'You set the time,' Moses replied. 'Tell me when you want me to pray for you, your officials, and your people. Then you and your households will be rid of the frogs. They will only remain in the Nile River.' 'Do it tomorrow,' Pharaoh said. 'All right,' Moses replied. 'It will be as you have said. Then you will know that there is no one like the Lord our God. The frogs will leave you and your houses, your officials, and your people. They will remain only in the Nile River.'" You see, it is the quality of our relationships that determine the quality of our lives. It is the quality of our relationships that determines the quality of our lives. Now, everybody has, perhaps if you had the opportunity to get into a plane, to travel somewhere, whether you go to, whatever you do, you may have the opportunity to get into an aeroplane. They normally give an instruction where they talk to you about safety. Before every flight takes off, they talk to you about safety. Then they say, in the unlikely event of whatever, of maybe the loss of cabin pressure, oxygen mask will drop from the area in front of you. Please place the mask over your own mouth and nose before assisting others. And I wonder, why do they say that? What could possibly be wrong with helping others first? And so I listened to the air hostess and I said, you know what? I like what you said, but as a Christian, I've been taught that I need to help others first before I help myself. So I don't agree with what you've said. What do you think is going to happen to me in the event that cabin pressure is lost and I want to help other people first? What is the most likely thing to occur? So when, in the case of the emergency, the masks are deployed, when oxygen levels has dropped dangerously low, the issue you have to recognize is that it doesn't take a very long time for when that cabin pressure has dropped for you to pass out very quickly. And so without your oxygen mask, you quickly lose consciousness. And so if we don't make putting our own mask on as a first priority, then we can't assist anybody. Now, I wonder, you see, because it messes sometimes with our theology as Christians. Oh, no. It's always for the other person first before it's me. And it's quite easy that we adopt those attitudes where it's always about somebody else. But like what we're saying is that if I'm going to love my neighbor, if I'm going to be able to relate well with somebody, I need to take care of myself first. There is nothing selfish about doing that. And this is why, because the Lord knows that loving your neighbor is not going to always be easy. That's why he made it a commandment. And to make it fair on us, he says, love your neighbor as you love yourself. And so we're not talking about, like we spoke about, what kids do. They're posting always, you know, on the phone, whatever angle they can have, they're taking pictures of themselves. We're not talking about that kind of Instagram, you know, that Instagram love. We're talking about just a genuine, healthy relationship, a healthy self-esteem, not the over-the-top kind of stuff we see on social media. And so why is loving my neighbor an important thing? Why is it just like that oxygen mask rule that we have to take care of ourselves before we take care of somebody else? And Danielle Burlock highlights three reasons. And the first one is that loving yourself, loving your neighbor means receiving God's love. To begin to love your neighbor as yourself, you need to know two things. Number one, you need to know what love is and that you are loved. That's the key thing in loving your neighbor. The second thing, this thing, that commandment comes, it comes with love your neighbor as yourself. So the measure in which you love yourself is the measure in which you can love your neighbor. You know why that is true? Because when you just love your neighbor without loving yourself, if you go the other way where it's a bit too much, you start doing things because you want commendation, because you want people to acknowledge and to see all that you're doing. But then the problem is that when people don't notice, you're going to get really offended. How come they didn't notice all the things that I do? So this is why it's as you love yourself. And this, it comes with a measurement. The measurement within this command is as yourself. So learning to love ourselves prepares us and helps us to love our neighbor. And it also means, loving your neighbor means showing grace. It means that, you know, it's like, imagine if you had a field of good soil and a bag of very good seeds. Would they produce a crop by themselves? The seeds must be planted and cared for. And grace takes the seed of his love and the soil of our hearts. And then that helps us create the fruit of the kingdom. So grace is really integral in helping us love our neighbor. And so to the degree to which your relationships are healthy, will your life be. And it starts with yourself. To the degree to which your relationships are healthy, will your life be. It starts with yourself. So we have this situation where Pharaoh has got this problem. He's got a problem with frogs. Now, who would have, if they were faced with that situation, would have said, when would you want those frogs removed? Now, I want them gone. I don't want to see them. I want them gone. And so why did this man say tomorrow? Something that seems so obvious. Get rid of this problem now. He said, no. I'll sleep with the frogs another night. Do it tomorrow. And remember that what Moses said to him is that, you know what? With this one, you tell me when you want me to get rid of the frogs. So he had the choice as to when the frogs would go. But then he said, tomorrow. Now, it could be the Egyptians viewed frogs as the goddess of fertility. So there could be that. Maybe they thought, oh, I don't want to kill the frogs. It messes up with our own beliefs. The other thing could be, remember, this was the second plague in which they were able to copy what Moses did. So he thought to himself, maybe if I say tomorrow, my sorcerers will help get rid of these frogs, and then maybe I don't lose face as Pharaoh. You know, I'm the Almighty, so I'm not going to lose face. But for whatever reason, he chose for it to be done tomorrow. And I don't know about you and I. We could have suffered an injury. We could have suffered a hurt. But we allow it to, we stay with that stuff for a very long time. We carry it with us. We carry that injury with us. We are wounded. And we know we've got wounds, but we still choose to live with those wounds and to carry them along with us, which is not good for us. In The Lion King, Mufasa, the father, is showing the son Simba the pride or the pride lands. And he says, everywhere where the land, where the light touches, that is our kingdom. Then the son said, but what about that dark place over there? And the father says, do not go. You're forbidden from going there. Don't go there. So it was a place where the father said, you're not allowed to wear, to go to that place. And so you then recognize that. And I recall a time where I said to the Lord, God, you can have everything in my life. You can talk to me about stuff. I can give you my money. You know, I can come to church, go to Connect Group. I can do all those things. But there's a certain hurt. There's something that you cannot touch my heart. And I remember verbally saying it, that whatever you do, you can do everything except this one thing. I don't want you to touch. Now, I don't know about you, whether you've had that thing where you say to God, Lord, you can have everything in my life, but there's just this one place that is a secret place for me. That is a place that's something that you're not allowed to go into that room. Have you ever been to houses where they say to you, you're not allowed to go into that room? You can go into any of the other rooms except that one. Or you can do whatever you want, but just don't open the fridge. And so when we've had traumatic stuff happen to us, we can sometimes be like Pharaoh. Instead of dealing with that issue, we stay with it another night. We say, the elephant graveyard, which was where the dark place was in The Lion King. Lord, I've got an elephant graveyard that I don't want your light to touch. This is just too difficult for me. I don't want to deal with it. And also, I don't want you to help me deal with it. Just leave it as it is. So your life will be as healthy as your relationships are. It starts with your personal relationship. Your life will be as healthy as your relationships are. It starts with your personal relationship. And this is why it's important for all of us that are young, that haven't yet lived very long, to be disappointed. Is to understand at this young age, at your young age, that I need to have a healthy self-image and a healthy self-esteem. Because my life will only be as healthy as my relationships are. And if my personal relationship with myself is very poor, then that is going to cascade into other areas of my life where all of a sudden I begin to overcompensate for something. Now, if I'm a needy person, whatever, I might have been abandoned, and I'm a needy person, what then happens is that I then want to attach onto other people because I'm just a needy person. Unless I am free from that and God helps me deal with that, I will always struggle. Where I'll feel that I'll keep chasing many relationships. It could be men and it could be women that I'm chasing. But that's because I haven't dealt with the core thing about why is it that I'm needy. So what can I do? What can you do when you've got things that have happened in your past that you need God to come and do something? And so just to finish that story about that dream. So probably this is, we're going back six years ago now, 2015, 2017. And so I'm having a discussion with my wife. And so she came to me and started telling me that, you know, now maybe she came as the representative of the children. They must have gone to her and said, Dad is doing this, and Dad is this, and Dad is maybe, I was being a bit harsh to them perhaps. So they sort of like saw their lawyer, their mother as the lawyer. And so she comes to me and says, this is all the things the kids are saying about me. Now, these were not good things. Or maybe I'm shouting at the kids. I'm just going extra with them. And so I then said to, we're having the discussion. This was probably around 8 o'clock on a Saturday night. And I said to my wife, I said, you know, the problem with you is you never defend me when it comes to the kids. Each time they say something, they go and advocate and say, Dad is doing this. Dad shouted at us. Dad did this. You never defend me. And that was a comment that I made to her. So I go to sleep at night. We go to sleep. And then I had that dream again, the one I'd been having for many years. And the woman that I was seeing in the dream all those years was my wife. And I would ask myself that in real life, I don't have an issue with this person. So that caused me, it perplexed me. Like, Lord, what is this? You know, I don't hate this woman, but in the dream, I really hated her, and I would verbalize it. But this time in the dream, there was my mother there, and then I said something along the lines that you did not fight for me. And you have to understand that I was raised by my maternal grandparents, and obviously with my paternal grandmother. And so for a long time, I felt that my mother never, because I never stayed with her, really stayed with her. And so I never felt that my mother really cared for me. She just sort of like, there you go, you know, to my grandparents. And she obviously had a lot of things going on in her own life. And so I always felt that deep rejection. But because the words that were uttered in the dream correlated with the words that I had uttered to my wife the previous night, it then clicked, that this is the individual I've got issues with. And so I remember at 5 o'clock when I woke up, I called my aunt in the UK and I explained everything to her. And so now for the first time I recognize that the person that I had an issue with, a rejection issue with, was my mother. And so what I then did was that I said, Lord, help me to forgive. Now sometimes, you know, when you don't feel like forgiving. Even though we know we should forgive, I want to hold on to that hurt a bit more, make them feel it. You know, but you know, in reality, is that they're not feeling it. You're the only one that's dealing with it. And you have to understand that my mother has now been dead 22 years. She died in 2000 when I was at university. And so never in my conversations would I ever bring up my mother. Nothing like that. And I just, as I began to forgive, and as I've got old, as I've begun to hear more of what she went through, I'm just like, man, I'm not mad at you. You know, like now I'm a bit more forgiving and understanding of what she went through as a woman. But still, I had an injury. And I had to deal with that injury. Understand that it was impacting my relationships, even with my own kids. Because the one thing I know about my mother is that she had a quick tongue. She could really cut you to pieces very quickly. And I recall a time when my son must have done something. And I was saying something to him. And that's when I recognized that, oh my goodness, I sound like my mother. I remember she had a sharp tongue. And so eventually it was impacting my relationships. That those deep rejection issues were impacting my relationships. And even to the point where guys, I remember, just, you know, when life happens to you, I then started being like a cynical person, not just because I was an accountant and an auditor, but just because I was just cynical. Now, if you're an auditor, it's good to be cynical because it's going to help you. You don't just go and do somebody, you audit somebody's books and be very trusting. You got to be a bit circumspect. And I recall being at a Connect group in South Headland, in up north. And one of the guys said to me, "Has anybody ever told you that you're a cynical person?" And that cut me really deep. And I know the reason why it cut me deep is because I was looking for something on the inside to say back to him, to just make him feel the pain that I felt. Do I want to be seen or relate to people? Do I want people to see me as a cynical person? No. And so that began the journey of me looking inwards to see what was going on the inside of me, because that's not the way that I wanted people to perceive me. All of us have got blind spots. And the reason why it's a blind spot is because we're blind to it. Have you ever tried to overtake a car, for those that drive, and as you think the coast is clear, and as you start to move over to the next lane, somebody's, you know, beep, you hear that sound, and then you look and say, "Oh, I never saw that vehicle." That's what happens when we've got blind spots, that normally another person has to point things out to us. Now, God can do that, of course, but also so can your friends. So can your friends do that? And I want to say that as I began to deal with those issues, it was, yes, of course, I most importantly saw God help me. I forgave, made the choice. But also, it's quite okay to seek help, to go speak to somebody, because I want to be the best me. I want to be free from the issues of my past so I can live a life and experience, you know, that joy when you're really just, you're just happy with yourself. You look at yourself in the mirror and you can say, "You know what, I don't have any problems with you." There's no self-hate, it's just love. Not that kind of over-the-top love, just a genuine, "I think you're a nice guy." And you've just got this healthy appreciation of who you are, because that's going to help you when you begin to relate to other people. This is the first year, I can say, in 2022, my mother's been dead all that time, where I actually said, "I miss my mother." Never before had I, and it was a bit of a surprise to me to say, "You know what, I miss my mother." It so happened that there was a book that I was looking to read called Reposition Yourself by T.D. Jakes, and I've had that book for over 12 years. And I probably read the first two chapters. And I thought, "You know what, I'm going to start reading this book on my birthday," which was the 4th of March. And as I opened the book, a little passport-sized photo of my mother fell out. And I thought, "Oh, that's nice." And so I just, you know, showed that to Nami. And then for my birthday, my wife got a portrait of, she got that thing blown up. And so now my mother's portrait is on one of the display cabinets in our home. Whereas before, my grandmother was pride and center of of all my photos would be my grandmother. But I'm so glad that my mother now is there. But that has taken years and years and years of seeking the Lord and speaking to people, when people expose the things that are going on in my life. So what I can do, the first thing you can do is to forgive. Make the choice to forgive yourself and others that have wronged you. And I'll just get Elta to get back up and start strumming. That's quite important, that you forgive others that have wronged you. And also you forgive yourself, because I think that's quite important. And forgiving is about that monkey that is looking to escape. Is that if you're going to escape, you need to let go of that hurt. You need to let go of that sugar in your life, because if you're not going to let it go, well, then you're going to be trapped. Then, of course, you seek God. "Lord, help me. Make the choice to forgive. I forgive so-and-so." And then you're constantly seeking the Lord. And that scripture in Psalm 139, verse 23, says, "Search me, O God, and know my heart. Test me and know my anxious thoughts. Point out anything in me that offends you, and lead me along the path of everlasting life." And that's where you're going to the Lord and say, "Lord, just help me, God, if there's things that are offensive within me." And you know, God will not let you deal with things when you're not ready. But you have to have a willingness to want to deal with whatever issue it may be. Because the object is so that you can be at your best. So you can not just clap about living a life that is free, you can actually experience the fullness of God's love and God's joy in your life. So you cannot separate the quality of your life from the quality of your relationships. Being free from the impact of your past will unlock your future possibilities. You cannot say, and I'll just get everybody to stand as we finish off. You cannot separate the quality of your life from the quality of your relationships. Being free from the impact of your past will unlock your future possibilities. And the last thing is stay connected. Stay connected to a group of friends that are going to love you, a group of friends that are going to speak into your life, so that they can show you that, oh, there's something off about you, because they know you. So don't ever disconnect yourself from a group of friends that genuinely care for you. Stay connected with church. Stay connected with a connect group. Stay around people that love you and want to see you just live your best life, be the best version of yourself. And so I don't know about you, as we bring this to an end,